You're listening to the And I Quote podcast, brought to you by Coterie Insurance.
Over the course of time, what I have recognized is that I get a different type of engagement on TikTok than I do on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And I think the content hits and resonates differently on TikTok because it's not tied to people's direct company persona and their position and work.
We will be bringing you conversations with industry influencers and experts discussing a variety of topics focused on our theme, because relationships matter.
Now let's dive in.
Hello, everyone. I am Bobby Calise, Chief Growth Officer at Coterie, and bringing to you another episode of the And I Quote podcast. Today, I'm super excited to have Emma Roloff on with us to talk a little bit about her impact on the insurance industry and some work that she's doing that I think you guys will be super interested in. And Emma, you want to just give a quick introduction and talk about a little bit about what you do and why you're excited to be in the insurance industry?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, Bobby. As you said, my name is Emma Roloff, and I am on the sales team with a company called EIS. So we help carriers, my focus is specifically in the P&C space, manage core policy administration transformation programs. And then we also have some claims automation solutions that sit on top of our platform or others as well. Kind of aside from my day job, so to speak, I also do a fair amount of LinkedIn, YouTube, and TikTok content, which is all focused on digital transformation and the insurance industry. And I think people are often confused when they hear like TikTok and insurance or digital transformation in the same sentence. But the thought process behind it is to try and help start conversations and get people excited about transforming the way that we work, and adding a little bit of like humor and entertainment into what is typically pretty serious subject matter.
Yeah. Well, and I had the pleasure of watching a few of your videos over the past few days, and I just love the content on how it's, to your point, entertaining. But they're very small, like little snippets. So like with the attention span of most humans these days, I think you bring both like the engagement and then the very short but concise content that everybody's looking for. Before we dive too far into just work talk and insurance talk, I just do need to acknowledge that Emma is also a Wisconsin Badger. Just like me. So we have that in common. We were just chatting before we got the podcast started a little bit about how we probably could have done this podcast in person, which doesn't happen very often anymore these days. But great to have a fellow Wisconsinite on with us and an insurance nerd who is super excited about digital transformation.
It is fun. Every once in a while, you like when you get into conversations with an insurance, a lot of people have roots or did a stint in Wisconsin, because we have so much insurance. But sometimes I forget about that because it's not necessarily front and center. So I love when I get that connection.
Yes, it's super fun. And there's just a lot of insurance folks in the state, and the insurance industry, specifically P&C, it's just a very small world. So I'm super excited we had the chance to connect today. So do you want to talk a little bit about why TikTok? You're kind of like an early adopter of that platform within the insurance industry. We don't see a lot of folks, even carriers and their marketing teams engaging in TikTok. Like, what was your primary goal of that platform and like the creating the short videos for your audience?
Yeah. So I, like most people, was passively engaging with short form content. Before I ever had a TikTok, you know, there's Instagram or Facebook Reels or YouTube Shorts and all of these other ways to engage with this content. And I was like pretty firm on not downloading the TikTok app. And I was like, I don't need that. Like it's just not something for me. That's for younger kids. So I resisted for a while, and I had an aha moment when I was speaking to an old colleague of mine, and he is in his 50s and he's got two college-age daughters. And he was talking to me about how he downloaded TikTok to see what his kids were using. And then the algorithm adjusted to the type of content he wanted to see, and he was hooked. And so he was telling me all about like the special salt and pepper shakers that he got and how he learned how to cook a steak this new way. And it was the best way he's ever had a steak. And he started talking about it. And I just had this light bulb of there are probably so many people within our industry that are consuming this type of information the same way that I am, whether it's not through the TikTok platform or are on TikTok, but maybe not actively posting or talking about it because they downloaded it to see what their kids were doing or to, you know, just to passively browse. And so I had that idea in the back of my head for a while. And there was one specific video that I could not get out of my head. And I was like, you know what? What's the worst that happens? I'll try it. And anybody that knows me really well, that first video, like when I posted it to LinkedIn, they were dying laughing. They were like, I could tell you're so uncomfortable. And I'm sure people that are outside of like people that interact with me on a regular basis couldn't, but it was something that was really outside of my comfort zone. And I was like, let's just see what happens. And the video got very good traction and took off pretty substantially. And so then at that point, I was like, well, I'll play around with it and see what happens if I do this once a week. Just something different to put into my content. Like you were saying, these nice little snippets of value that don't take myself too seriously. And then pretty quickly from there, as I got more dangerous with the app and better at editing and that kind of thing, it's actually become one of my preferred tools for all types of videos. So I do explainer videos. I just have talking videos where, you know, ideas that are bouncing around in my head. And then, of course, some of the more stereotypical, like trending TikTok sounds and that kind of thing. But I've found that it's like a really nice platform to create on. And then that content can kind of move across platforms and give me the opportunity to tap into different audiences that are interested in transformation and insurance.
I love it. So tell me more about who was your intended target audience when you started working on this? And then what is the audience that you're seeing with engaging? Is it the same? Are they different? Did you hit the folks that you initially thought you would, or were there surprises in there, Emma?
Yeah. So my initial audience was like with that first video was my kind of typical audience on LinkedIn. I did not think that there would be much traction for my content on the TikTok platform itself. It was more like, let's create this and then bring it over to LinkedIn. And so that, you know, it specifically was targeting my same audience of people that are helping to facilitate transformation and or, you know, executives that are setting strategies within companies. The first video that I made, which anybody that follows me knows, this is like a saying that I say all the time, but it's like digital transformation isn't about technology. It's about people. And that reminder that even when we're looking at engaging with people through digital channels, there's still people on both ends and that yes. We need to keep that in mind. Over the course of time, what I have recognized is that I get a different type of engagement on TikTok than I do on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And I think the content hits and resonates differently on TikTok because it's not tied to people's direct company persona and their position and work. So what I'll find is sometimes when I'm posting videos, I'll post them both. Certain things will take off on TikTok that don't take off on LinkedIn or vice versa, just because of how the algorithms work. But even if the same video takes off on both platforms, the interaction and the comments that I get is very different, which I think is a really interesting dynamic that helps me get into the mindset of a lot of these people that are working in these companies moving through transformation, and they'll give brutally honest feedback about how they feel like it's going or what they're seeing within their company that they might not comment or interact with you in that capacity on LinkedIn, which also kind of informs the way that I talk to executives. It informs the way and certainly like increases my view on the importance of change management.
Yes.
Because I will see a lot of times that continues to be the piece that we're missing the mark on when it comes to the actual employees that are changing the way that they work.
Yes. So I love that. And I'm actually not surprised because I think, I'm trying to think now, 3 or 4 I actually used to work on the carrier side before jumping into startup and Coterie. And I think I've been through 3 or 4 policy administration system transformations, none of which went super well, all of which were very challenging. On top of that, on the agency side of the house, to your earlier point, when I see them adopt new digital tools, many times if they're not successful, it's because they did not operationalize them well, right? So talk to me a little bit about like, what are the key learnings if it's a carrier audience or an agency audience around change management, as we're bringing more technology into our organizations to hopefully help us move faster and better, but actually many times slows us down. Like, what are some tips that you can give the audience on like your observations and just based on the comments and feedback you're getting from TikTok and LinkedIn?
Yeah. So I always talk about, I mean, there are people that have very well thought out, complex change management methodologies that we could dive into. And if you've got a team that's ready to help you with that, that's great. But at a bare minimum, regardless of how much investment you're making into change management, I always talk about 3 things that have to be present. And I think they're just kind of like good leadership skills as well. And the first is making sure that you have a really, really, really clear vision of where you want to take the company. And it sounds so basic, but when you come down to it, when we're looking at implementing technology, there needs to be a really strong why behind why that technology is coming in, and not just because we need a new system, but these are the things that it's going to enable us to do. And at that executive level, that can be a pretty a broad vision statement, but then you have to take it down to the next level and help your leaders in each area of your company understand how to take that why and specialize it down to their team. And then those leaders in each one of those areas of the business have to be able to take that and help each person on their team understand what's in it for them. And so it's all informed by that large vision at the executive level. And you have to start with that because otherwise you've got people going in different directions. But it has to get down to that level where every employee in the company understands where you're going and why you're going there and how it's going to help them with their specific job. And so I think that that's like the first, you can't really be successful with a transformation without that component being there. Then the second part is really communicating throughout the entire part. And, you know, you mentioned the idea of operationalizing a change.
Yep.
Part of what I think a lot of companies do, especially larger companies, is you can't have everybody involved in every decision that's being made, right, or you never get anything done. But you have to have the right people in the room to help you figure out how to solve those problems and actually impact that, like, what's in it for me, across all of those different roles within the company. And even if somebody isn't involved in making every one of those decisions, you need to be very thoughtful about your communication strategy on how you're telling them what's happening in that implementation and keeping them involved even at a distance. So things like lunch and learns or newsletters, you know, sometimes you get that stuff as an employee and you don't read it. But the more that your team works on communicating with you, one of their avenues is going to hit you and you're going to stay involved in what's going on, even if it's just a high level progress update, so that you know that progress is being made. Because the other thing is there's so many people that have lived through a technology implementation where they like heard that it was going to happen. And then 6 months later, all of a sudden they're sent an invite for a training and they're like, whoa, where did this come from? And like, who is involved in these decisions? Or they heard something's going to happen and then they never see the end result of it because something happened along the way, project fell apart, and there was no communication about it. And that's when you're going to start to see like resistance because people don't know what happened and how this change got put in front of them. Or you're going to start to see disbelief that change is ever going to happen and kind of cynicism start to bubble up within your organization because they just don't think that you can deliver on these big sweeping statements that you're making about digital transformation. So that communication piece is really important. And then finally, the last part is making sure that you're taking the opportunity to celebrate and recognize progress along the way and little wins along the way. Because especially with something like a policy admin implementation, it can take a really long time.
Yes.
And it's really easy for employees to get demotivated moving through that process, or again, have this question of like, are we even doing anything with this project? And so if you can take that time to even as simple as like a message out to your team, shouting out the people that have been involved in requirements validation and yeah. talking about the fact that you've accomplished that stage in the project, or we're moving into testing and these are the people that we want to thank for being a part of this testing team because we know it's extra work. Or again, I know there's like a little bit of, you know, joke about the idea of like pizza parties and that kind of stuff within the office, not necessarily being key motivators for employees, but just small recognition of what's happening throughout that process to, again, like bring this feeling of inclusion to your entire team throughout the progress of your project and make sure that they don't feel surprised or caught off guard when that change finally lands in their lap.
I love that, Emma. Like it's, and all of these are simple concepts, right? Like communicate, understand the why, celebrate small wins. Those are all like simple leadership concepts that should be always driven, right? Every single day. And what's interesting though, is because it's tied to a digital project, I think it becomes sometimes overlooked because it becomes more of a project management, like managing tasks versus managing the people. So love your insights there. Have you, or do you think, this is just random off the cuff as we're talking, do you think that like small TikTok videos could be a good communication tool for internal comms around this kind of stuff? Because to your earlier point, a lot of times folks don't read it, or like they're not interested in it, or they don't catch it, or it gets, you know, buried in their day to day.
Yeah. So whether it's like TikTok style videos or even just like there's lots of video email tools that are available. So I know there's like Vidyard and Loom, and I'm sure there's many, many more that I haven't even experimented with. But even just doing that kind of email communication with a video in it, there's going to be people that opt towards reading. There's going to be people that opt towards watching. And the more that you can vary your communication tactics, the more likely you are to hit everybody across the spectrum within your team. So again, not everybody wants to go to a lunch and learn, but there's probably people that have questions that want that level of detail that will attend your session and ask you questions and get what they need out of it. And then somebody else could watch a 25-second video and feel like, okay, I'm good. I've got what I need to feel comfortable. And so I think that there's a big opportunity for that. I've seen leaders just even doing short 2-minute videos once a week to their team to help build culture and like build that a bit of what we're missing being remote in a lot of settings.
Yeah.
And so I think, again, just bringing back as much of that human element into it as we can will help us refocus on kind of what the why is behind what we're doing at the end of the day.
Yeah, totally agree. So just thinking about our audience too, of being, you know, our independent agency partners, they're going through their own digital transformations, not a policy administration system. So kind of a different thought process, but as you think about your experience with policy administration system transformations and the why behind that, right? And some of that has to do with integrating with independent agents. What are your thoughts there for our independent agency audience? Like, where do they start? I'm sure some folks it's super scary, right? And there's a big tech stack that they're working with as well. Do you have any insights there, Emma, that you can share?
I would say one piece of advice that I have for anybody, whether it's the agency or carrier side or really people in all different kinds of industries, is to make it less scary, start spending time doing what I call building digital literacy. And really getting familiar with what the quote unquote art of the possible is with whatever problem you're trying to solve. So, you know, whether it's my content or, you know, any of my peers in the technology space that are doing things, podcasts, these types of things, there's so much information that's available to us at this point that we should be leaning into learning more about these tools so that we can make informed decisions about what technology to bring in. And part of the reason that I'm so passionate about that is I, a couple of months ago was involved in what's called LinkedIn's Accelerator program. And it was like a specific project from LinkedIn to kind of like create content. And I had this idea of explainer videos, which for somebody like me who works and lives in technology all the time, I wasn't sure how explaining basic concepts like what is AI and how is it different than machine learning, if that was even going to be content that people wanted to consume. And through that program, which was about 12 weeks, I think, it created this library of these different videos. And the amount of people that reached out to me afterward and were like, thank you for explaining this in like plain English so that I can start to think about how it comes into our company, was really eye-opening for me, because we all consume technology all the time. We all interact with it in our personal lives, but really breaking down some of those concepts to build that basic understanding removes a lot of the fear and starts to really get the gears in your mind turning about how that comes into your own individual environment. And especially with something like you mentioned, this idea of like the dependencies of integration and how interconnected everything is. Even if you're not focused on implementing AI today, you should be thinking about how the platforms that you're putting in place right now can help you build a foundation to be able to take advantage of that technology in the future. So that's like my biggest advice for people as they're going through that, is building that digital literacy on the front end. And then, you know, when you are looking for new solutions, once you've got that digital literacy, you're going to be better prepared to ask questions and work through the process of selecting the right technology. And once you have the right technology at your disposal, then it's less about the tools and more about your process and, again, your people that are involved in that. And so I sell technology, so I feel a little like ridiculous sometimes saying like it's not about technology, but if you've selected the right tool, your challenge should no longer be around technical capabilities. It should be around how do we design a process that helps us streamline processes internally and make our employees more efficient and improve our customer experience, because that's what every company is trying to do at the end of the day.
Yes.
And the secret sauce comes from how you're able to use those technology tools to kind of unlock both of those avenues. And so I think that digital literacy piece is really, really critical when it comes to selecting the right technology. So then you can focus on the pieces that truly unlock that success for you.
So thinking through the digital literacy, that tied my tongue up a little bit. And our audience, like where the best resource, like obviously you have some tools, right, that could help with that. Best resources, in your opinion, to help develop that within any organization at this point?
I would say just like literally even going into Google and typing what is such and such type of technology, you're going to be fed with all different kinds of videos, whether it's from McKinsey or Deloitte or, you know, all of those big consulting firms kind of have this push towards helping build some of that. So I know like PwC and EY all have these resources, whether it's my videos or theirs, that are explainers that kind of break these concepts down for people. I think that's a really great spot to start. And then there are countless books and articles and that kind of thing. It really comes down to what your modality of learning is.
Yeah.
I'm not somebody who can sit down and read business books. I will start to fall asleep. So I listen to them on audiobook, and I do it while I'm walking or folding laundry. Podcasts are a really great option for me because of that as well. But then even just like sitting down and like asking vendors that you're working with too through this process. Like if you've got vendors that you're working with, ask them to come in and help give you a demonstration of like what's new and upcoming in your platform, and spend some time like jotting down notes of what those terms were that you didn't know, and go back and do research so that the next time you have one of those conversations, you can ask more informed questions. So it doesn't always have to be stuff that's like outside of the tools that you already have available. Take advantage of the vendors that you've got. They'd love the opportunity to come in and talk to you about that, and hopefully educate you along in that process and then give you tips on where you need to dig in deeper with other resources.
I love that. So on the same topic, within your suite of content and your videos, where have you received the most engagement on you know, explainer videos, like what are the topics that you're getting the most hits on, Emma? Just that might give folks a place to start, right? Maybe I should understand a microservice, or what is an API, or et cetera, yep. et cetera.
So you actually just hit us. So the top performing ones, that AI and machine learning difference one was one that was big, because I think, and this is something that vendors do a lot, which I think is confusing to people. It's like if you're walking around on a trade show floor and you have a bunch of people with technology platforms around you, everyone's going to say our platform has AI and ML. Well, AI is the umbrella term and ML is a subset of that. So you're kind of just saying we've got flowers and we've got roses.
Yes.
And by saying it that way, you confuse people into thinking that these technologies are different somehow, when really it's a more specific term to talk about, you know, being able to recognize patterns and mimic the way that the human brain works. And so that video by far was the top performing one. Then up next would be what's an API? Because I think everybody knows the term API, but like, what does that actually mean? And what kinds of questions should I be asking a vendor was something that resonated a lot, because there's proprietary APIs, there's open API architecture. You know, how does that play into what we've got going on? What if I've got a legacy system? Is it able to play nicely with these modern tools? So that was another big one. And then I would say microservices and cloud architecture were the other ones that seemed to get a lot of traction and interaction with people, and like messages and comments coming back from people being like, okay, I finally get it. I used to be a teacher, so I know how to break down concepts in a way that's plain English, and coming into technology, not having a technological background, I had to figure out how to make sense of all of these terms for my own brain. So I can do that back for other people now because I went through that process myself.
Super excited to have you on the podcast today. I want to wrap up with just more of a fun question. And I haven't actually done this, I don't think, in this season yet. But so everyone has a walk-up song, right? So like, what gets you pumped up? Like, what's that one song that if you were going to like be an MLB player and you're going up to bat at the plate, what's your walk-up song? Because I think that gives
my husband is laughing in there because I can't imagine what different songs he would think. And I have, I'm like blushing a little because this is going to age me as a millennial so much. But I would say like, it's the song Circus by Britney Spears.
That's awesome.
It came out when I was in high school, and it's like one of those songs that like anytime it comes on, I'm like, ooh, yeah, this is a good one. There's plenty of other kind of like bad rap songs that might make their way if I had the opportunity to feather multiple in. But I would say like Britney Spears through and through has a special place in my heart.
That's fantastic. She's been in the news lately too, quite a bit. Which has been interesting, but yeah, she also, was very inspirational for me as a teenager. So, it's dating me as well.
I had a lot of, Britney Spears. I think I had a Barbie, I had a t-shirt. I was like that main demographic that just grew up with her along the years. So I can't shake it.
That's awesome. Well, Emma, thank you so much for being on our podcast today. It was a pleasure, getting to know you a little bit more and just kind of harvesting your knowledge around digital transformation. It's in front of our faces every day, whether we're on the carrier side or on the agency side, and quite frankly, even outside of insurance. But appreciate your time, and like, let's find some time to have lunch together. We live really close.
Definitely, agreed. And thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to the And I Quote podcast, brought to you by Coterie Insurance.
We will be hosting episodes with industry experts on a variety of trending topics this year, and would really love for you to listen and subscribe.
Coterie Insurance is on a mission to simplify small business insurance for agents, brokers, and our partners. To learn more about Coterie Insurance and this episode, please visit our show notes below.